Friedman and Dr. Meyer. It's really a pleasure to be here with you. I understand you have a somewhat limited time period, so a hard stop at 1:13. So we weren't sure whether we should make time for questions, not make time for questions. All right, so we'll try to play it by ear. So essentially, to say a few words of introduction, and we'll see how many words we get a chance to say. So when considering Lashon and Hara questions in general, I think one thing you discover is the reason there's been such a focus, I think, on the laws of Lashon Hara ever since the Chafetz Chaim wrote his Sefer a long time ago, is because we recognize that there's a lot that goes into every decision, that it's hard to come up with any absolute answers or absolute rules because there's so many variables. And that's why it takes a lifetime to study. We have to really spend as much energy as we can developing the sensitivity because there's so much judgment involved. Everything is going to involve a decision this way or a decision that way. And it's very rare that there's an absolute principle that's going to tell you for sure. So the most you can do is devote a lot of attention to trying to understand the underpinning values and trying to develop a sensitivity which takes a lifetime to all of the opposing forces so that the judgment that you make is the most informed kind of judgment and represents a discretion that is substantive and that is built on the values of the tradition. So when we take that perspective, so we can spend a few minutes trying to map out what some of those points are within the laws of Lashon Hara. And I'll say right off the bat, I know one of the major things that we're supposed to talk about is faculty meetings, is teachers meetings. I think that's supposed to be the main topic of discussion. So in general, something I've been saying a lot recently is that people ask about reviews on websites or about newspapers or about anything like that. And they say somewhat paradoxically that we shouldn't pay so much attention to the big issues. We should pay more attention to the little issues. Because the question is not so much, are newspapers permitted, are reviews on websites permitted, or are teachers' meetings permitted? Because all of these have a place in our society. The question really comes down to the details. How do we go about doing these things? And if we focus too much on the big question, then sometimes we tend to lose sight of the necessity to pay attention to the details. So you see this, for example, a lot in the newspaper question. Okay, once you have asked the question, are newspapers appropriate or not, or do newspapers have a role or not, so then it tends to be less attention paid to the specifics about how the newspaper would go about doing its job. So too, I think with this question and with every question, it's not so much a question of if, it's much more a question of how. So the question of whether or not to have faculty meetings, we'll talk about a little bit, but that's much less our interest, I think, than what kind of mindset to have when you go into such a meeting. So first, just to sketch out the concept of Toelas. So as Rabbi Rice identified that as the central issue in almost every Lashon Hara question, but certainly in this context. So we know that there is a notion that even though we normally are prohibited from revealing either negative or private things about other people, but sometimes it is not only justifiable, but necessary, under this broad heading that is called toelas, that's called purposeful. And it's often underappreciated that the Chafetz Chaim, everyone blames the Chafetz Chaim for telling everybody what not to say. He was really the one who devoted the most attention to this concept of toelas. The laws of Lashon Hara, in the negative sense, are all found in the Gemara and the Rishonim, are all there from long before the Chafetz Chaim. But he was the one who really called our attention to the fact that there is a balance and that we have to figure out how to weigh the various factors up against each other. And there are two basic understandings one can take towards how this develops, how you have an idea of toelas. On the one hand, here we're saying that you shouldn't speak badly about people, and yet we're finding times when you can or you must. So there are two different ways to understand that. And they emerge from two different ways to understand what Lashon Hara is about. And they're probably both true. This is a point that Rebbe Yonah makes in Shari Tshuva. It emerges from a careful reading of the Rambam and Mishneh Torah that Lashon Hara probably has two distinct elements to it. One is that it causes harm, that it's an aspect of the issue of mazik, of harming people, of causing actual problems for other people by talking about them, and the assumption is that you could cause problems that are unwarranted, that are unjustified. So Lashon Hara is a problem for that reason. And in addition, there's a very significant midos issue. That the understanding is that gossiping and talking about others is corrosive to the soul and connects to all kinds of other problems. So we have these two elements, and there's some room to wonder what's the controlling element. They're probably both true, they're probably both present, and they both affect how you would understand the exclusion of Torahs. That if you believe that Lashon Hara is basically a midos-driven issue, it's about the corrosive effect of gossiping, of thinking negatively about people, of speaking negatively about people. So then you can understand that maybe anything that's purpose-driven, anything that's for a reason, is by definition not gossip. Lashon Hara is gossip, and this is not gossip. This is something that you're doing for a purpose and for a necessary benefit. Alternatively, if you focus on the fact that regardless of the midos involved, you are causing harm to somebody by exposing whatever negative information or whatever private information, so then we're not going to look so much at whether you have bad character traits at play. That's not the issue. The issue is the impact. And that could happen regardless of what other character you have. So then the only thing that really justifies it is that there's a competing value. And that competing value is usually identified as lo samod al dam re'acha. The Torah tells us that we can't stand idly by when somebody is at risk. So literally it sounds like it means if somebody's going to be killed, lo samod al dam re'acha. But as the Rambam explains in Sefer HaMitzvos, it's not just that, it's anything even much less than that. Any type of physical or material or spiritual harm of any degree, if you know that that is at risk of happening and you can stop it, so you're obligated to intervene. So then it becomes a clash of two values. On the one hand, you don't want to speak badly about other people. On the other hand, you also can't be passive if there's some kind of risk and you could make a difference. So the second possibly might outweigh the first. And the idea that these are two values that are posed against each other, that are possibly in conflict, could be found from the fact that they're both in the same pasuk. This is the same pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. The first half of the pasuk is Lo Seilech Rachel B'Yamecha, you shouldn't walk around as a talebearer. And the second half of the pasuk is Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha. So one could read it, as many do, as saying on the one hand, don't speak badly if you don't have to, but you also can't be passive if there's some kind of risk, if there's some kind of harm, and that might tell you that you do have to say something. So this yields the whole literature about Toelas. How do we figure out when it's necessary, when it isn't? There are many different attitudes towards this. The Chafetz Chaim has between 5 and 7 rules, depending on which section of Sefer you're looking at. He has a number of rules. Some of them are pretty intense that have to be fulfilled before you can say it's justified to say something. And others disagreed. So, for example, the Chazon Ish took a very different view and thought that as long as it's purposeful, that basically that's your guideline if you're going to be beneficial, if you're going to make a difference in some situation, so then that justifies it, and that's essentially the rule. So there's a lot to discuss about what the rule is, what the rule isn't. There are a lot of points in between. It's an interesting Bar Torah in Parshas Vayeshev could mention, but I'm not sure if we have the time for it, so I guess we'll save it for later, or I'll point you where to look, because it's a nice Bar Torah for that Parsha, but it's not necessarily something we can spend time on now. But there's all kinds of different attitudes as to how you define the rules, and I think some have boiled them down to a smaller list than 5 or 7. The key points to focus on are that it really is at least beneficial, if not absolutely necessary, and that it should be as accurate as possible, and to recognize that a lot of what we think is accurate is often not accurate. And that's actually, we spend a lot of time on in the book, about highlighting the fact that there's a lot of misconceptions about just how strong our perceptions are and how many cases there are where we might misunderstand something, or we might overread something or underread something, or have too much confidence in what we think. So being aware of that, correcting for that issue, is a very major part of deciding what you can and what you can't say. And because that's so hard to do, so that's also part of why we try to avoid it at all, unless it's necessary. So we're balancing, okay, how necessary is it to say something? And then I have to try to be as careful as possible to try to make sure what I'm saying is accurate. or at least that I'm aware of my potential for inaccuracy, that I know that my knowledge and my perception is not perfect, and that there are biases, and that there are missing parts of the picture, and the more you're aware of that, the better you are, the better off you are. Okay, so with that framework, so there are many areas in which Toelis comes up, and the most well-known, it comes up in the context of Shiduchim, it comes up in the context of business. Those are two examples the Chafetz Chaim mentions right off the bat, and there are many other areas in which it comes up, but of course the educational realm is a major one. So what about the context of teachers and students? One of the points that was very, very hotly debated, it's not so much relevant to teachers' meetings, but it's relevant to teachers and students, and just to give a sense of variety of positions that you find on this issue, was a very intense machlokas. About 50 years ago, Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva where he said that it's wrong for a teacher to ask one student to inform on another, because doing so, said Rav Moshe, would train the child, assume he's probably talking about younger children, it's not clear though, it's younger children, you'd be training that child in speaking Lashon Hara, and that's not a good approach. Even though, says Rav Moshe, we know that the Chafetz Chaim writes, and the Gemara says, that it can be necessary to talk to an authority figure if there's behavior that needs to be corrected. So it's legitimate for the student to come to the teacher and say that other student needs to be addressed, needs to be helped along the way. But, says Rav Moshe, that doesn't mean that a teacher should solicit it from the student, to ask the student to talk like this when they're not coming forward on their own. He thought that that was very damaging from a chinuch perspective. And many others very strongly disagreed. There was a very intense debate about this at the time. In many of the rabbinical journals, there were a lot of articles written about this. They said, Rav Moshe, what about the idea of toelis? If a student is misbehaving, if a student is a problem for other students, if a student's simply not developing the way they should be, all of this could be very important. How could you tell the teacher that they shouldn't be asking students for this kind of information? And Rav Moshe held firm. Rav Moshe wrote another tshuva about this afterwards, responding, and he said he hasn't changed his opinion. He still thinks that this is the case. And whatever problem you're trying to help, how do you know that Lashon Hara is not a worse problem? He was very strong about this. And again, others disagreed. So more recently, for example, a very well-known name is Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, so his sefer on Vayikra. He very strongly disagreed with Rav Moshe. He thought that the job of the teacher is to teach the nuances of Lashon Hara as well, not just that there's a prohibition, but that sometimes it's necessary to speak up, and that's as important. And he has a kind of a sharp line where he says, if the teacher can't do their job, okay, then maybe Rav Moshe is right that we have to err on the side of not leading them into Lashon Hara. But the better model is if the teacher is able to convey the balance. So this is just an example of an issue that's relevant in the educational realm, where there was some pretty intense back and forth and varying perspectives all revolving around the same principles but coming to different conclusions. So when it comes to meetings of faculty, when it comes to rebbeim's meetings, to teachers' meetings, meetings of faculty in general, so there is a lot of discussion to be had, generally revolving around the fact that other teachers are present, or that other individuals are present. So everyone would agree that for a teacher to come to a principal and say, I have an issue with a student, help me deal with it, or vice versa, that that's legitimate in the area of toelis. The big question revolves around the fact that what about that in the context of a meeting, you have other people there. That not everybody who's there is directly involved in the story, so is that something to worry about? So there's a lot of discussion about this. It's a very beautiful sefer on Hilchos Lashon Hara, and it's called Zerach Chaim, Nesivos Chaim, Shvilei Chaim. It's one of those three sections for him. Each one has a different title, so all of those are the title. Familiar with the sefer? So in that sefer, he has a whole discussion at the back about faculty meetings. And he comes from the premise, he says, it's quite obvious to him that they are permissible and that they are appropriate. And he discusses a couple of important points. He says that, first of all, the assumption is that by discussing this with other teachers as well, even not just, let's say, the principal, but with other teachers, so it's possible to get a significantly enhanced perspective towards the needs of educating the student. And he highlights a couple of interesting things. He says, first of all, you might get a very different picture when you say the student acts this way in my class, and the other teacher says, well, in gym he's very different. Well, in physics he's a different student completely. So then you get a little bit of a better insight as to what's going on, as to what's the complete picture. So he thinks that makes a big difference. He also goes on to say that it might not just be that the student has a better time in gym or in physics than they do in Chumash, or a better time in Halacha than they do in Chumash, or whatever it is, but maybe there isn't really total compatibility between the teacher and the student. So the teacher has formed a negative perception of the student, and really it's more about the connection between the two, and he implies that there's something lacking in the way the teacher is relating to the student. I mean, the teacher hears that the other teachers say, well, she's great in my class, well, I find much more to the student. So then the teacher who brought that up, so then has a different way of relating to the situation and is able more to correct for what might be missing, and he takes it as a given that this is a very valuable interaction that could make a big difference. So he notes there that there are some concerns. There's a concern that whatever is being discussed there might get out, might leave the room, whether inside the school or outside the school completely, and that's certainly a significant concern. So therefore he emphasizes that the idea of confidentiality has to be taken very seriously. There is, in general, a whole discussion that when something is said in public, so there's a cryptic passage in the Talmud that says when something is said in public, you're allowed to repeat it. It's not considered to be private anymore. So the Chafetz Chaim, in general, says you have to be very, very careful with applying that because there's all kinds of limitations. But especially in a faculty meeting, it's almost surprising that it's even a discussion because it would seem kind of self-understood that there's an implied confidentiality. So even if there are 100 teachers in the room, so the Talmud uses the model of 3, more than 3 is considered public, but it's kind of self-understood that when you have a context which requires privacy, so that it's not really going to be a question of numbers, that the understanding is that this is a confidential matter and shouldn't be discussed outside the room. And if that has to be impressed upon the teachers, so then so be it, but that's one of the major concerns, that it shouldn't leave the room. But within the room, as he emphasizes, there is a lot to be gained from such meetings, and therefore he assumes that that is within the general category of Tuelis. Now, to say something maybe a little more controversial, so I know this is also a point of different policies in different schools, while saying that, he's not so excited about the meetings including teachers who don't teach the students. Everything he's been saying till now is assuming that everybody who's a part of this discussion teaches the student. So they may not have necessarily have brought up the problem or been aware of the problem, but what he's been establishing till now is that all the teachers or the student can gain from talking to each other. From his perspective, he thinks that to have teachers who don't teach the student is not necessarily productive, although this is something which clearly many schools take a different attitude to and find a different perspective towards. So why would you take a different perspective? So there are a couple of reasons. So first of all, one of the working premises of a lot of these meetings is, as the Pasuk says, a tshuva berov yoetz, that you'll get more insight, you'll get more counsel with more advisors. So if you're talking to people who may not be the actual teacher of the student, but are professionals and are experienced, and deal with these kinds of issues with other students, so then there is an assumption that that's already a productive discussion, and that maybe that's also within the broader framework of Toelis, but you can see why that's also a little bit disputed, because it goes to the question of how are we understanding Toelis? Is Toelis something that will allow as long as it's beneficial? So this is basically like consulting an expert, the group of experts who you work with, or should we say that Toelis is really only because of the struggle between Lo Samar Al Damriecha and Lo Seilech Racha B'Yamecha, so when you need to, when you actually have to prevent a problem from happening, then you talk to who you have to, but you keep it very limited, and you don't necessarily expand the circle. So there's a general tension in terms of that whole theoretical question, and it influences some of the decisions here also. So would you expand it to a larger group of teachers who don't even teach the student? Or would you say, no, we want all the teachers involved, but only the teachers who actually do teach the student? So that itself was a big discussion. He also mentions in this context that there are some benefits to including teachers who don't teach the student in the conversation. mentions, for example, if you have a student who's going to pose a problem to other students in the school, either actually physically or because the student is a bad influence on other students, so then it might be necessary for this to be discussed in the broader range of the faculty. Also, sometimes there are issues of sensitivity. Sometimes a student has something going on in their life, and it's important that everyone who might interact with the student, even in less than a formal context, be sensitive and be aware of what to say and what not to say. So then that's the kind of information which maybe could also have a value to being discussed outside the immediate group of teachers who are teaching the student. He also goes on to say that could still make a case as well that there's a value in having the whole faculty present, because to whatever extent the whole faculty hears about all of the issues, so then the faculty will have a greater perspective about what's going on in the institution, how the institution works, what are the challenges the institution has, what are the needs of the institution. So maybe there is a value from that perspective. And then he goes on to say that the truth is that that's more relevant for the principal, it's more relevant for people whose jobs actually involve dealing with the institution as a whole. And he assumes that the average teacher who doesn't have that kind of responsibility is not going to have the time to be able to take on that kind of focus. Now that last point, and the truth is all of these points, are somewhat subjective. So this is all about assessing and analyzing where you think you're going to make a difference, what kind of involvement and input is going to make a difference. So no one mechaber is going to be able to set with absolute letters in stone what's going to be necessary and what's not going to be necessary. So what we need to do is to make a good faith effort to try to understand as best as possible what really does contribute to the well-being of our students, what really does contribute to the smooth functioning of the institution, and if it seems that it's justifiable and that it contributes to that to have a broader population at the meeting, so then that might make sense. And if not, so then that's also something that might be a logical decision as well. And within the question of who's there, then comes the question of how do you make a decision about what to say? So that involves very careful thinking on a micro level of every comment. What is likely to be beneficial, what is likely to be positive, and it's also entirely possible that there's many different levels. So at the meeting itself, a teacher might feel, okay, I'll mention A, B, and C, and D, I'll mention it to the principal privately. It's not something I'm going to bring up to the whole population because that's on a different level, and I feel that that has less to be gained. So this is all going to be a judgment call, and the goal is that we want a judgment call that is developed through a very careful intuition. I mentioned maybe Alpi Darach HaDrush, that we have a mitzvah in the Torah to remember the story of Miriam. The Torah tells us later on in Sefer Dvarim that we should remember what happened to Miriam when Miriam spoke Lashon Hara in Parshas Baloscha. Miriam speaks badly about Moshe and is punished, and then later on the Torah tells us to remember that. And the Ramban writes in his commentary to Chumash, and also in his commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, that this is a real mitzvah. This should be one of the 613 mitzvahs. He doesn't know why the Rambam didn't count it. But this is a real mitzvah to remember Miriam so that we should keep away from Lashon Hara, so that we shouldn't fall into the trap of Lashon Hara. So one of the great Bali Musar, the Mashgiach of the Slobodka Yeshiva, his name was Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher, so he has a discussion about this where he notes that it's striking that you need that, because we have a lot of mitzvos and averus in the Torah. And it's not the case that for every mitzvah, for every avera, we have a story about somebody who had an issue with this and got punished, and a separate mitzvah to remember the story. So why is Lashon Hara so lucky? So he explains that Lashon Hara is very complicated, that it involves human interactions that are not always so easily predictable, that you can't always know what's going to work and what's not going to work, what's going to be beneficial and what's not going to be beneficial. And the proof of that is look at Miriam, and something the Rambam does, right, in Mishnah Torah actually. Then if you look at Miriam, so Miriam is at Tzadekes. Miriam only meant well. Miriam loved Moshe and raised him from his youth. There's nobody who could be better intentioned than Miriam. And yet, if Miriam still got involved in a situation that needed to be corrected, so what hope is there for the rest of us? The rest of us are coming from a much less advantaged position towards this issue. So the only answer could be that we have to remember that story. So if we're thinking about this all the time, so then maybe we'll develop a sensitivity over the course of a lifetime so that the decisions that we make could be correct. But there's no one answer to a lot of these questions. It's a judgment call. So we seek to have a judgment that is best informed by all of these different values. So it's interesting also to mention, if we have 9 more minutes, that... Okay, so there is probably also another relevant discussion, both to this and to the general educational question, that there are those who raise the question, strictly speaking, from a perspective of Hilchos Lashon Hara. So let's say, for example, a teacher wants to, or a principal, probably more likely a principal, wants to write a letter to a student's parents, a negative letter saying the child has been misbehaving or has been functioning poorly, so the principal wants to send a letter home. So can the principal ask the secretary in the office to type the letter? So we generally take this kind of thing for granted. This happens all the time. But the question seems to be a real one. If the secretary wouldn't otherwise have known about this issue, so is it legitimate to involve a third party in this discussion when theoretically the principal could type the letter themselves and send it out without involving a third party? So this was actually a major dispute in Poskim. It's Tzitz Eliezer in one of his tshuvas. This is in Chelek Chaf and Siman Nun Beis. Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva where he assumes that this is permissible. He assumes, for a number of reasons, that this is the kind of thing that can and should and may take place. Because, he says, a number of reasons. He says it's understood that the teacher and the staff are all like one person. They're all functioning as one unit. That's taken as a given. It's necessary for the smooth functioning of the institution to have the division of roles that they have. And also that whoever enters into the situation understands that. That when you send your children to a school, so you understand that that's how it operates, that the principal has a secretary, that there are other people who are in between who may find out about things in the course of administrative clerical work, and that's part of how we arrange these things and we enter into it knowingly. So that Tzitz Eliezer took it as a given that this was... Okay, so let's just finish the sentence, though. Just a note, so Tzitz Eliezer allowed that. Rebbe Yoshev was much more machmer on this. Rebbe Yoshev did not allow this. In a different context, he was talking about doctors and evaluating other doctors. He was very against it. And his son-in-law said, are you sure? What if they leave out the names and they fill in the names themselves later? He still didn't allow it because he was afraid people would find out about it. So he took a very opposite approach. And Rav Huttner, Yitzchak Huttner, in his letters, so he was closer to Tzitz Eliezer's position. There's a Gemara that says that when a Bezdin sends out a messenger to get somebody to come, if that person is chutzpahdik to the messenger, they're allowed to go back to the Bezdin. The messenger can go back to the Bezdin and say what happened. So Huttner extrapolated from that, that that's not just about Bezdin and the messenger. It's about any institutional need, the basic mechanics of making an institution work, or the institution is justified in the first place, that all of that is not subject to Lashon Hara in that sense. So there's clearly a range of perspectives on that. It's relevant to this as well. And then we'll stop there for questions. Any questions in the few minutes that we have? Hi.
Many of us are asked to write recommendation letters or be references to students for summer programs or digital schools or... How does that? I mean, it's written versus verbal. Ostensibly, it's only going to the head of school, but who really knows?
So you're asking a few questions. I guess the last part of your question is, whatever you write, you have to worry that somebody outside of it is going to read it.
Anything written, I guess, carries that. But also, sometimes these forms have, like, rate the child's emotional maturity or leadership abilities, and it's like a scale of 1 to 5. And it's, accuracy, I guess, but for your own perception of accuracy, but definitely...
Yeah, so one of the biggest problems I have with that point that you're mentioning, so first of all, recommendations in theory have a strong place, and very often they're necessary, and that should function squarely within the realm of Toelas, and it would be wrong not to say what you know if it's actually going to affect the institution. And that often is the cause of problems. People err on the other side and aren't ready to, in general, the problem with Lashon Hara is that everybody has a backwards attitude. They're always ready to speak Lashon Hara unless it's L'Toelas. If it doesn't impact anything, so then you'll say whatever you want. But when you realize that it may make a difference, it may impact on the job or the shidduch or whatever it is, so then you become much more careful about it. Really, it should be the opposite way. So with recommendations, you do need to be honest. But there are, and it's important to say what you know, but there are a number of considerations. So one as you also, this takes again some judgment and understanding, is that there's a language for recommendations. So sometimes everyone is in the habit of writing that this student is the absolute best student I've ever had ever in my entire life, and you write that for every student, and they get that for every student. So when you write the student's pretty good, so then all of a sudden they think he's an axe murderer. So you have to have a sense of what the level of interpretation is, which is not easy. That takes a level of judgment. But also what you brought up, a very, very important point, and I find this all the time in recommendations, is they'll say, you know, list this, how good are they at this, how good are they at that. And a lot of these things we don't even see as teachers. They're not, how good is he at basketball? I don't know. It doesn't come up. You know, it doesn't, or how are they with their parents? And I teach college students, I don't see them with their parents. A lot of the questions, we don't really have the way to answer, and that has to be conveyed also. This is one of the issues, and it's something called the availability bias, that people give more weight than they should to the information that's most accessible to them. So if the people who are nearby, they can ask the question to, they weight that more than they should. So for example, I get this at the time also, so I teach young men, so people ask about the shidduchim, and sometimes I don't know the person that well. So sometimes, for example, they ask about a YU guy, I'm the only person in YU they know. So I had relatives in Lakewood who would ask that, I'm the only person in YU they know, so what do you know about this guy? And I don't really know that guy so well. So my opinion shouldn't matter, but they don't understand that because they only know you, so they're asking, they're assuming that you are fully equipped to answer that question. So that comes up with recommendations also, to be able to convey that your access is limited, so you are saying exactly what you know, no more, no less, is an art. It's not so simple. Hi.
I want to ask about the reverse question. What if a student is talking about the teachers in a constructive way, like in college, high school, and he gives you a recommendation to take this class or not to take this class, and then we give critical analysis of teaching and style of teaching.
Right, so that's also tricky because theoretically that could be the Toelis as well, but again, all the human weaknesses come in, so. The fire? Okay. Fire's over? Okay, so that all the human weaknesses come in as well because theoretically it's important because it could be relevant to
Miriam Caslow, Devorah's wife, Tova Blander, Edita Spinner, please come to the front. 9H and 9-2, please go to room 110. 9H and 9-2, go to room 110, and I need Miriam Caslow, Devorah's wife, Tova Blander, and Edita Spinner, please.
Could be relevant to education, which is important, but it also has to be accurate.
Connie Schoenfeld, please.
So just, anyone know anything about all these people? So just to illustrate from my own experience, so at YU, so I teach in yeshiva, and I teach in the college in the afternoon. So in the college, they have teacher evaluations. In Shir, the feeling in the yeshiva is that it's not the chavadik to have evaluations. The Beshechter has always felt that it should be the opposite, that there should be teacher evaluations in Shir also. Don't we think Shir is important? If we think Shir is important, then that should also be evaluated. But the attitude is the opposite because they feel that it's not respectful to evaluate their bay. So I get evaluated in the afternoon, but not in the morning. And one could take the opposite approach. And then just to highlight this example, so in terms of my afternoon evaluations, so they ask a bunch of questions and they average them in to the score. So one of the questions they ask is, was this course very demanding of my time? So it's not clear why that's considered to be a good thing. So I don't try to overburden a busy college student, so I intentionally don't make it very demanding. So that always get a low score, and that brings down the average of everything, which just goes to show you that you can't know how to rank these numbers if someone's coming with a certain perspective and your perspective might be totally different. So here again, this is all a very good example of the big question. Recommendations, evaluations, do they have a place? Absolutely. How do you do them? So the devil quite literally is in the details, that there's a lot to work out to make sure that it actually is effective. Hi.
A very good question. When you spoke about writing a letter to a parent, sometimes faculty will converse through email about a student. I often try not use the student's name. We'll talk about the student who we spoke about the other day, you know. But is there a difference between writing something in pen and paper, which you know is designated for one place, and writing something in email, which in the snap of a button can go all over the world?
It's one of the many.
We know that has happened.
Yeah, it's one of the many subjective differences that people, it's not an absolute difference because theoretically an email can be private and a written letter can be public. But the reality is, as you point out, that it's so much easier for an email to get around and to be copied without any effort than to be around essentially forever. So it's just a question of degree, that one needs to be that much more careful. In general, also the forwarding of emails, which people also take as a given that they can do, is highly questionable from a Lashon Hara perspective for a lot of other reasons. I think we don't have the time to go into the details about that, but there's a lot to be more careful about with how emails are done. All the more so, right. Yeah, so that significantly shifts how things are perceived, which is not simple at all, but that's without problems. There's a lot more to say about that, but I think, unfortunately, time doesn't commit. Thank you very much.